Let's go through this paper business. You started out with white paper?
Mm-hmm. We started out with white paper, bought it in huge rolls, about 3,000 pounds a roll. The first thing we did was we had to thread it. Of course, we ran it through a tent bath, just completely saturated.
So it had been cut in strips? Or
no, it was still 19 inches wide.
Okay.
When we ran it through the bath, we had to saturate it to dye it, because they were using green paper. We started with white paper. So we dyed it green, and then we ran it through a watermark roll, and then back and dyed it again, and then through an oven. The oven was about 750 degrees Fahrenheit. We were running about 350 to 400 feet a minute. And then when it came out the end of that oven, it had to be dry. Then we put glue. We had an applicator roll on the end that would put the glue onto the back of the paper. Then we had to run it through another oven to dry the glue. To do that without it curling up was a challenge, because you were wet on one side and dry on the other side. When it got out, if it was too wet, it would stick together when we rewound it. If it was too dry, it wouldn't re-moist in or it would curl. So we had to learn to do that. The first year before I joined them, that's basically what they were learning. They would buy paper, dye it, and throw it away, and buy more, and dye it, and throw it away, and trying to figure out how to do it. They had that pretty well figured out by the time I arrived, but they didn't have the manufacturing part figured out or printing part figured out very well.
You mentioned glue. How did the glue come to you?
We bought glue in tank truck quantities, and I think it came about 6,000 gallons per delivery, and that's about 10 pounds a gallon, so it's about 60,000 pounds of glue we bought. And that glue, at our peak when we were really running, I bought that every 11 days. We're a big glue customer.
How many stamps would you print in a day?
We measured everything in 5,000 stamp increments. So we would print 5,000 books or coils in a shift. We were running at one time three shifts and two machines. I figured out about 850 million stamps a week.
How many were you employing at that time?
I was running about 35 per shift, and when I had three shifts, you know, I was up around 90. A little more.
Now, you didn't want people to know what you were doing.
No, as I said, it's like printing currency. I didn't want to advertise that we were printing that sort of thing there. The fewer people knew about it, the less problem I had with security.
But the city of Sand Springs had to know what was
going
on.
Oh, yeah, they knew.
You think Tulsa knew?
We were called the stamp company. There were people in Tulsa that knew, yeah, but we just didn't advertise it.
But the large population of Tulsa probably didn't
know. I don't think they knew we were there. I talked to people today, and they said, well, I didn't know that was there, you know.
Right. Did the newspaper ever do a story on you?
They did one story on me. That was one of the biggest mistakes I've made in my life. As time went on, we got more efficient and we could print stamps in greater quantities. As a matter of fact, later on in the 60s, the Sperry & Hutchinson business was slowing down just a little bit. Sperry & Hutchinson didn't want me to print for other companies because they kind of felt like they had an exclusive on our shop. We didn't have enough to keep us going three shifts a day, 7 days a week. I went to them, told them, look, I'm going to have to do one of two things. I either have to sell stamps to somebody else to keep my volume up, or I'm going to have to raise your prices. They were pretty reluctant about it. They didn't want other people to know what they were doing, and they pretty much didn't want me to do that. But I eventually convinced them that I could do that without anybody knowing what I was doing. We're a high-security business, and I didn't give out any information about quantities and that sort of thing. They eventually agreed for me to do that. Well, I went and sold stamps first to Top Value Stamp Company.
Okay, before we leave the factory here, would employees steal the stamps? Was that a problem?
No, it wasn't. They all realized that it was a high-security plant and that we couldn't afford to have the name of people getting out. But they all knew that they were numbered, and they knew that we could track them back if we ever suspected anything. If we ever did have a problem, we'd prosecute it. We'd make it just as tough on them as we could, and then we'd make it public that we had done that. So people pretty well understood to leave it alone.
They did have these mysterious letters and numbers. So exactly what was on the stamp?
The Sperry & Hutchinson stamp had the S&H logo on it. And then we printed a number on the top. It started with AAA, and then it went to 1,000. Each stamp went from 1 to 1,000, but they're all AA1, AA2, and like that. And then when we go to 1,000, we'd go to AAB and then go 1 to 1,000. The numbers were almost infinite that we could use on a stamp. We printed those on each stamp. And then we printed another number at the printing press that was the same for a book of stamps, but it glowed under a black light. So you could tell immediately if it was a counterfeit or not. Well, I could tell across the room if it was a counterfeit, nobody could do it.
Would merchants have to be careful, too, when they were delivered to their place of business, that they'd have to check them for their authenticity?
I don't think they worried about that very much because they came from us and they were packaged the same way every time, and it would have been pretty hard to deliver it to the store.
And how were they packaged?
Well, depending on what product it was. We had two types. We had a pad that had 5,000 stamps in it, and it had a front cover and a back cover. We would put those in packages of 10 and then put those in cartons.
Where were you shipping them to?
We shipped them to S&H warehouses, and then S&H delivered them to the merchant.
Obviously, many stores in Sand Springs were S&H merchants.
Yeah, Sand Springs and Tulsa both. Well, there's a lot of stores. And we had redemption stores, if you remember, here in Tulsa. Very popular, yeah.
Did you collect yourself?
I couldn't hardly afford to. But, you know, in a way, everything I have, I got with train stamps. You think about it.
Right. That is true. What about security? Now today we have electronic security. You never had any of that back then.
No, we didn't have it, but our building was fenced off. Each department had a separate fence, and we had a back gate that had officers there around the clock. In addition to that, it was locked, and employees had to identify themselves to come in and out. Visitors couldn't come in. They had to come in front office. If we felt like they needed to go out, then we could take them out. But they had to be accompanied by an officer of the company.
Your company at this time was making a lot of money.
I don't know that it was. It depends on what you're comparing it by. I think we were at that time grossing about $4.5 million a year.
That sounds like a lot of money to me.
Then it was more than it is now.
Yeah, right.
Today it's
yeah.
Not so much. Yeah, it was good business.
Have we kind of talked about the goings-on in the factory and the manufacturing of them? You think we've covered that?
In a way, we haven't. The reason they hired me is because they hadn't figured out how to run the plant yet. They initially hired an accountant out of New York City to come down, and he spent more time in the local bar than he did in the plant. And then they hired an engineer to come down, and he did pretty well, but he was from the Northeast and pretty abrupt, and morale in the plant was horrible. I mean, he just couldn't get along with them. When I came in, of course, they showed me what their problems were. They'd lost money every year that they had been there, and it wasn't getting any better.
But they hadn't been there all that long, had they?
No, they'd only been there about 3 years.
Okay, so
the first year, they didn't produce anything, just trash is all. They didn't have anybody that would just stop and try to analyze the problems and figure out what they were. You know, I found several major problems that made a significant difference. I went to work there in October of 65, and we were way in the red that year. By the end of the year, we were almost back up to break even, not quite. The next year, we made money, and then we never had a year that wasn't better than the year before after that. But I found so many things that they were doing that was just so obviously wrong and had to be changed.
Sperry and Hutchinson must have wondered for a year or two, did we make the wrong choice here?
Well, they did, for sure.
So when you came along, you were their wonder boy.
Well, yes. But it's interesting for me because things were so bad, everything I did was good. You know, I couldn't do anything wrong, seemed like. We were worried about quality first and then quantity after that. I figured how fast the presses would run and how much they should produce in a shift. We kept on until we found out what was causing us not to do that. Mm-hmm. I found some weird things. You know, if you think about numbering every stamp, that's quite a feat. We were printing 20 stamps across, and every 10 stamps, they had to change numbers because that was a page. So we had 20 numbering machines across and then 10 around a wheel, and every one of those had to rotate at just the right time. We were having so much trouble with numbers. All the numbers were wrong and weren't printing very well, and I was standing there looking at that one day, and what it should do as it goes around, it should index, and then ink, and then print, and then index. Well, I was watching that, and it was doing it just backwards. What they'd done is they'd put the cam that caused that to turn like that, they put it in backwards. It would ink, and then index, and then print is what it would do, so there was no ink on it. Plus, it was going the wrong way. So anyway, we changed that, and the numbers started working, and of course, the spoilage went down, quantities went up. So just little things like that. We printed the saver books also that they saved those stamps in. And, oh, they were fighting those. There was a lot of levers that would pull the paper in and out. And they were jamming all the time. I was watching that one day, and I looked around. There's a bunch of red rubber bands instead of springs on those levers. And I tell them, take those rubber bands off and put springs back on. Well, it's faster to put a rubber band on it. So I tell them that two or three times, and then I'd go back, and they'd still be there. I finally, one day, I stopped that thing, and I said, I'll tell you what, the next time I come through here, if I see another red rubber band, the whole crew's leaving. We got rid of the rubber bands, and things started working. It's just simple things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. You had a mechanical mind, too, didn't you, in addition to being an accountant?
A little bit mechanical. I stayed with them. We had troubles with those presses. There was several times when we'd take those presses down, try to get them running right. I'd look up and there'd be a different shift watching us, you know. We'd go through three or four shifts like that. But once we get it to going, then they were running good.
Were there those who were manufacturing fake S&H stamps, that was their business? Was that a problem?
John, they tried, but it really wasn't that much of a problem. They were so obvious when you saw a fake. They didn't have the equipment we had. There's no way they could do the quality that we did.
But how long along the chain did it get? Did they actually get into a store where somebody would redeem products?
We saw a few, but it really wasn't very much.
Yeah.
Where we had more problems than anything else, John, is when they would find a way to steal a whole box of them or a bunch of them at one time, and then they would redeem at a store. Well, of course, it was interstate, so FBI would get involved on it when they would find big ones like that. But how they would find them is they'd come with big sacks of saver books filled up, and they would all be the same consecutive numbers, you know. Well, you'd have to buy an airplane to get that many stamps with consecutive numbers.
Right.
So they would call me. I could tell them where I'd shipped them, and then they could follow it from there clear on to where they ultimately were distributed.
So they never got them out of your place at all. It would be in the distribution places.
We never lost any that we knew of. We had people want them. Once in a while, we'd have a community project. Somebody would want to take a tour through the plant. Didn't do that very often, but once in a while we did. We had some DARs one time that wanted to go through, and I said, okay, we'll do that. Beside the machine that slid them down and made them into coils, when you thread that machine, there's a certain amount of extra that you have to tear off. Well, they put them in a trash can there. Those little ladies, they see that. Before they all wanted a handful of those, we're just going to throw them away anyway. Let me have those.
Right.
We couldn't do it.